spring is basically wrapping up, school is letting out, and I think we all know what that means.
Vacation planning time.
Exactly. It's that annual realization that you need to figure out your summer plans. But right away, I want to say, we're not doing the usual doom and gloom narrative here.
Right, because there's plenty of that already out there.
Oh, for sure. You know, you see the headlines about budget airlines going bankrupt, flights feeling impossibly expensive, and packed airports. But for this deep dive, we're pulling from some really fascinating recent research. And our mission today is to to explore the complex realities of the current travel market.
Yeah, we want to look at the actual math behind the sticker shock.
Right. We want to explain why things cost so much more right now, and more importantly, how you can still actually pull off a great trip.
And that's key, because a brief overview of this research shows that this isn't just about high prices. The travel market is fundamentally reshaping itself. It's completely reorganizing around things like timing, your personal flexibility, and a really complex web of hidden fees.
It's wild. But to get into it, we have to start by establishing the baseline, right? Like, what does the new summer travel reality actually look like?
Well, the research quantifies it as a perfect storm that's hit the industry.
Which means what, exactly?
It means you have labor shortages, broader economic inflation, and just overwhelming consumer demand all crashing together. So when you look at travel costs across the board, flights, rentals, hotels, food, they are up 22% compared to April of 2019.
Wow, 22%. That is a noticeable chunk of change for the average family.
Oh, absolutely. And airfare alone jumped more than 20% just compared to last year.
Just 1 year. And hotels are just as bad, right?
Yeah, the hotel sector is a great example. Back in 2019, the average U.S. hotel rate was about $132 a night.
Which sounds incredibly cheap right now.
Doesn't it? Because by 2025, that average is projected to sit well over $160. And in major tourist cities, you're looking at a floor of $200 to $300 a night.
A floor. Meaning that's the absolute cheapest you're going to find. And, you know, the squeeze doesn't stop once you drop your bags off.
No, it follows you right out the door to dinner.
Yeah, the research actually points out that food costs for tourists are way up. And it's not just restaurants padding their margins.
Right, they're paying more for everything.
Exactly. They're paying more for the raw ingredients and significantly more for the shipping, especially for things like fresh seafood. Plus, you know, they have to pay surging utility costs just to keep their walk-in freezers running during these crazy record heat summers.
So every link in the supply chain gets more expensive, and the tourist at the very end of the chain absorbs all of it.
Yeah. Which is kind of crazy when you think about it. I mean, how are they getting away with passing on 100% of these costs?
Well, it comes down to demand.
Right. The way I like to think about it, it's like the post-pandemic travel industry is this giant rubber band.
I like that analogy.
Yeah. Like during lockdowns, it was pulled all the way back. Nobody went anywhere. Then when restrictions lifted, it just snapped forward violently, much faster than the industry could actually handle.
And that snapback is exactly why hotels and airlines have such incredible pricing power right now.
Because we're just paying whatever they asked.
Basically, yeah. People are stubbornly prioritizing vacations over almost any other expense. They aren't treating summer travel as a luxury to cut back on anymore.
Oh, right. They're treating it like an absolute necessity, like a mental health requirement.
Exactly. And the industry knows this.
Okay, so we know it has gone up and we know demand is crazy. But let's transition to the biggest root cause driving these massive numbers, and that is fuel.
Yeah, you really can't overstate the impact of fuel right now.
No, you can't. And the research points to a very specific geopolitical elephant in the room, the U.S. and Israeli war with Iran, which started back on February 28th, 2026.
Right, and we should be very clear here. We are not taking any kind of political stance on this conflict.
No, not at all. We are strictly looking at the economic impacts documented in the research. Because whether you agree with the politics or not, the economic ripple effects are just undeniable.
Very true. The conflict was a primary catalyst for the recent fuel spikes.
Yeah. Like, look at the national average for gas. In late February, it was $2.98 a gallon. By May 14th, it had climbed to over $4.53.
It's a huge jump. And the Brown University Iran War Energy Cost Tracker put some really staggering numbers to this.
What did they find?
They estimate that Americans have paid over $20 billion extra for gasoline since the war started, and another $17 billion extra for diesel.
That is just $20 billion. Let's try to bring that down to earth for a second. The research gave a specific road trip example, right?
Yeah, a drive from Orlando up to the mountains in North Georgia.
Right. So, say you have a 15-gallon tank. In February, filling that up cost you about $44.70. But today, it's $67.95.
Which is almost a $24 difference every single time you hit the pump.
Yeah. So, if you use three tanks of gas for that trip, driving up, driving around, and driving home, that's nearly $72 in extra costs purely for gas.
Just for the privilege of driving your own car.
Okay, wait, I gotta push back slightly here though.
Sure.
Wasn't inflation already a huge issue before February? Like, is the war actually the main cause or just a convenient excuse?
Oh, inflation was absolutely an issue before. The system was already super strained by labor shortages and that snapback demand we talked about.
Okay, so it was already bad.
Right. But you have to look at the conflict as an immediate, unavoidable shock. It injected an instant cost spike into an already fragile system, so it acted as a major accelerant.
That makes sense. And if regular cars are feeling that squeeze, obviously we have to talk about vehicles that burn exponentially more fuel.
You mean planes and cruise ships?
Exactly. The aviation and cruising casualties of this whole thing are wild.
Yeah, the research highlights that jet fuel has nearly doubled since the war began.
Doubled. And we saw the very real fallout from that in the first week of May with the demise of Spirit Airlines.
Yeah, that was a huge moment. Spirit basically went under because of an unmanageable $100 million in extra fuel costs since the war began.
$100 million extra just in a few months. That's devastating for a budget carrier.
It is, because they rely on ultra-thin margins. And the ripples from this are global. Qantas and Air New Zealand are cutting flights and raising prices.
Right, and Norse Atlantic cut their long routes from LA to London, Paris, and Rome entirely.
British Airways is dropping long-haul routes too. And Volotea, they actually added a 9 € retroactive fuel charge.
Wait, retroactive? Like after you already bought the ticket?
Exactly. They basically said, hey, fuel's too high. You owe us 9 more euros.
Oh, wow. People must have been furious. But in the US, the reactions from the airlines have been a bit more stealthy right
Very
now.
stealthy.
Yeah.
Delta raised their first checked bag fee from $35 to $45.
Yeah. And Southwest raised their checked bag fees by $10 too. 45 for the first, 55 for the second.
And United took a slightly different approach. They're just cutting 5% of their flights.
Which is what, like 500 flights a day?
About that, yeah.
Yeah.
Which limits supply and keeps the remaining flights totally packed.
And what about cruises? Because those ships are practically floating cities.
Oh, they use an unbelievable amount of fuel. The research points out that massive ships, like Royal Caribbean's Oasis of the Seas, use well over $1 million in fuel for a single 7-day trip.
$1 million in gas for 1 week? That is insane.
It is. But you don't always see that reflected in the base ticket price. Companies like Carnival, Norwegian, and Royal Caribbean hide those costs.
Oh, right. It's like a leaky bucket.
Exactly.
You know, you see this cheap headline fare, maybe $400, and you think you got a deal, but then the money just slowly leaks out of your wallet.
Yes, you pay higher port fees, the drink packages are suddenly way more expensive, the Wi-Fi costs a fortune.
Even the mandatory gratuities go up, or they hit you with those retroactive fuel surcharges.
And there's a very specific reason they do it this way instead of just raising the base ticket price.
Why is that?
Because they compete on search engines. When you search for a flight or a cruise, you sort by price, lowest to highest.
Oh, right. So if they raise the base fare, they drop to page three.
Exactly. By keeping the headline fare low and jacking up the fees, they stay at the top of your search results.
Wow. Okay, so we've got financial pressures, fuel pressures, hidden fees. But let's shift to the other side of this, the changing landscape of our own behavior and the weather.
Yeah, this is where things get really tricky for the consumer.
Because the research shows those easy pandemic recovery discounts are completely gone.
Totally gone. Demand is no longer suppressed, and the dynamic pricing systems that airlines and hotels use are incredibly aggressive now.
Meaning they heavily penalize you if you wait to book.
Right. They know when you're desperate, and they spike the price.
And it doesn't help that our calendars are more squeezed than ever.
Oh, the calendar is the biggest obstacle for families. You've got school schedules, sports camps, summer internships.
Everyone is trying to travel in this super narrow window in June and July.
Which forces everyone to compete for the exact same flights and hotel rooms.
So let me ask you this. What does all this mean for the traditional summer break? Like, is having your kids out of school actually a disadvantage now when it comes to booking?
I mean, statistically, yes. It's a huge disadvantage.
Wait, really?
Yeah, because summer travel isn't just one big market anymore. It's a collection of vastly different experiences, and it's dictated almost entirely by your personal flexibility.
Because if you have to travel the second week of July, you're going to pay the maximum price.
Exactly. And then you have to factor in the climate disruptions.
Oh, man, the weather, the heat waves, the hurricanes.
The wildfire smoke. It's forcing travelers into even shorter, safe weather windows.
Or making them pay huge premiums to go to areas that are considered lower risk.
And don't forget the logistical nightmare of summer storms. If a heavy storm hits a major hub like Dallas-Fort Worth, Atlanta, or JFK,
it just cascades. Flights get delayed, crews time out, and you're stuck sleeping on the airport floor.
Exactly.
Okay, so with all these obstacles laid out, we have to talk about who is actually taking the hit here, and more importantly, how our listeners can fight back.
Well, the research is clear that families with kids and lower-income households are getting hit the hardest.
Because of those rigid school schedules, right?
Right, and because they've lost budget options like Spirit Airlines.
Yeah, that safety valve is just gone. Mm. And even road trippers are finding their expected savings just completely erased by the gas and food costs we talked about earlier.
It's tough, but there are actionable strategies in the research to help navigate this.
Okay, lay them on me. What can we do?
First, you have to focus on the total trip cost. Not just the airfare or the base hotel rate.
Right. Look out for the leaky bucket. Find those resort fees and car rental add-ons before you click book.
Exactly. Second, flexibility is your best weapon.
So flying midweek instead of the weekend.
Midweek flights, traveling during shoulder periods right before or after peak season, or even just using alternate airports.
What about where we're actually going?
That's the third tip. Consider shorter trips. Or look for destinations that are just outside the major tourist hotspots.
Like staying a few towns over from the beach instead of right on the boardwalk.
Exactly. You still get the vacation, but without the premium price tag.
Okay, I love that. But I have to bring up this one massive aha moment I had reading this research.
Oh, the trains.
Yes, trains as an alternative. It turns out Amtrak and Brightline are seeing ridership go way up.
They really are. People are catching on.
And Amtrak has this thing called share fares. Have you looked into this?
A little bit, yeah.
It's brilliant. If you have a small party, like 3 to 8 passengers, you can get up to 60% off your tickets.
Wow, 60%.
Yeah. It's specifically designed to compete with the cost of driving. So you avoid the gas spikes, you avoid the airport chaos, and you just sit back. It's such a great hack.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it aligns perfectly with the core philosophy of all this research.
Which is what?
In today's travel economy, a little strategic compromise is everything.
Meaning you don't have to force the perfect traditional trip.
Right. Choosing a destination just outside the city or taking the train instead of flying those compromises often yield a much richer, way less stressful experience than just fighting the crowds for that dream itinerary.
Yeah. It's about being smart, not just spending more money. So just to recap the journey we've been on today.
It's been a ride.
It really has. We looked at that 22% baseline inflation across the board. We explored how the geopolitical fuel spike is acting as a massive accelerant.
We uncovered the hidden fees that cruise lines and airlines use to stay visible on search engines.
The leaky bucket. And we talked about the death of the easy last-minute bargain thanks to dynamic pricing and rigid schedules. But we also found ways to fight back with total cost planning, flexibility, and my favorite Amtrak share fares.
The whole new playbook for travel.
It really is. And it leaves me with this final thought to ponder. You know, with dynamic pricing punishing us for traveling when everyone else does, and extreme weather shrinking our safe windows.
Not to mention our calendars getting squeezed tighter every year.
Right. So are we witnessing the cultural end of the summer vacation as we know it?
That's an interesting point.
Like, will future generations just stop doing the big 2-week summer trip and rely entirely on fragmented micro trips scattered throughout the year instead?
To just outsmart the algorithms and avoid the crowds.
Exactly. It's definitely something to chew on while you're planning your next getaway. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.